San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. And if you search us on the show title on iTunes, where you can hear us there, the podcast, and also we stream live on 760KFMB.com. And if you download the app for 760KFMB, you can hear us on your smartphone or any other device. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a best-selling author, and he's a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe. Thank you.
Wow.
Busy week.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about first? Dick Enberg?
Let's congratulate Dick Enberg.
Guest of the show.
The Ford C. Frick Award as bestowed by the Baseball Hall of Fame. Dick is being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in July of 2015.
Wow, congratulations.
He was, in competition with about 15 other longtime and luminary broadcasters.
I think there's so many different ways to get in. I think the fans, I think I even voted for him. There was a way to do something online or whatever.
Exactly. But anyway, Dick Enberg will be in the Baseball Hall of Fame just over a half a year. And boy, does he ever deserve it. What a great baseball announcer. And
it's not the only Hall of Fame he's in, by the way. Remember, we read through his laundry list of accomplishments.
Exactly. I think he's in the
Basketball
Hall of Fame. Yeah, basketball.
And maybe even football. I know he's done every tennis. I don't know.
He's won awards in every sport that you could broadcast.
I can't think of another sportscaster that has done more major sports events as a broadcaster.
So, Joe, I got to do this. Oh, my. Congratulations, Dick Enberg.
There you go. Hey, speaking of prior guests, we had Dr. Dave Clayton on last week, and I wanted to follow up with him. There was a study about the intermittent fasting and whatnot, and he wrote me back. He endorses that. If you just cut down your window of eating from 12 or 15 hours down to 8 hours, you'll have probably some success in overcoming obesity and other issues. It works on mice so far, and they're still studying it. And as far as supplements, I sent him another article on supplements. We didn't get to that last week, but there was a fellow online who's taking a ton of supplements for his IQ, et cetera. And Dr. Dave says if you just stick with fish oil, fiber, and vitamin D, fish oil, your goal should be 2,000 milligrams a day, omega-3. Fiber, your goal should be 40 grams a day. And vitamin D, it's not found in food, he says a goal of 1,000 a day or take a supplement. So there you go. And ClaytonMD, TotalHealth.com, if you want to get in touch with him. And
if you want to improve your IQ, do a lot of reading.
That certainly helps. Then I also want to congratulations. J.W. August has been in the news business in this town and elsewhere for 39 years. He's retiring this month. The party is this week, so I'll be over there congratulating him. And he was a guest of the show, and when he's, everyone knows who he is. So. Also, let's see. I saw this film Foxcatcher the other night, and talk about it deals with this guy, the heir.
Haven't seen it yet.
One of the heirs to the DuPont fortune.
Right.
This was based on a true story. I'm not spoiling it because there is a homicide at the end by this heir to the DuPont fortune, who was a big benefactor in the wrestling world, the Olympic wrestling, back in the 80s or 90s, but Steve Carell's in it, and man, I'll tell you, it's a totally dead serious role for him. You wouldn't recognize him, and it's just an interesting film. I think if you're looking for something with holidays, you might want to check it out. And also The Real Deal, which features San Diego State student films, the best of. We're going to have a little on the 16th. We're going to have a little screening of the premiere episode at Lestat's West, if anyone's interested.
So, Adams Avenue, 3300 block.
You got 6:45 start. Get there early. The seats are going to go. And there's another film we have to talk about, or film series we have to talk about with our guest tonight. So why don't we get to it? What do you say?
Let's do it. But I have one other thing to announce.
Oh, okay.
As though having 10,000 runners and 16,000 people at the Oceanside Turkey Trot wasn't enough this year, We're going to be adding a women's tennis tournament that week of Thanksgiving, next November of 2015. It's going to be the last stop on the Women's Tennis Association tour in Carlsbad, the same week that my Oceanside Turkey Trot runs. So we're going to be branding that through my foundation.
Wow, very cool.
And it's going to be really exciting because we're going to be adding all kinds of different component pieces. Yeah. So it's going to be a week-long festivity of health and fitness.
Maybe you can get that endorsed by our friend Billie Jean King, who's been a guest on this
show. Well, Billie Jean just said, don't do the tournament in July, you know, because that would compete with her world team tennis.
Right.
And I said, of course, Billie Jean, we won't do it in July. We'll do it in November and then pray for good weather.
All right. Well, maybe she can
help
out.
So it's exciting news.
Yeah, that's great.
It's exciting news.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Now let's get to our esteemed guest. This gentleman has been a life in the military and now in the private sector. What can you say? He's a prominent military and civilian sustainability leader. He's a native of Portsmouth, Virginia. He's had some tenure at the University of San Diego. We'll get into all of that, but I'd like to welcome to our show, Len Herring. Len, how are you?
I'm great. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Joe, that's Admiral.
Admiral. Herring. Yes. Rear Admiral, actually.
Yeah, Rear Admiral.
By the way, I looked that up, Len. Now you can enlighten us. There's so many different categories of ranking, and where, you know, a Rear Admiral as opposed to an Admiral. I never knew the differences. I know we've heard the jokes and all, but.
the jokes abound. But there are four pay grades in the Admiral category. There's a one-star, two-star, three-star. And then the four-star. The four-star is the admiral. There are no prefixes.
Uh-huh.
A vice admiral is three stars. And then there is a rear admiral upper half and a rear admiral lower half, which is two stars and a one star. I was a rear admiral upper half, a two-star admiral.
Huh. And it's just a different level, skill levels and experience or responsibilities or...
A little bit of both. Throughout my career, a warfighter by trade. A surface warfare officer, and when you become more senior, they start to look at particular skill sets that provide opportunity for you to benefit. I have an MBA, so I used my business skills to become an infrastructure a management expert. Mm-hmm. In the facilities world.
I love to see officers come out of the military and get into academia and private sector because all the discipline, all the brains, and they bring all that to the table, which is wonderful. But let's go over your bio a little bit, Len, because you were born in Virginia, right?
Great.
Portsmouth. Maybe you could just give us a quick little thumbnail of your whole career and
who we are. Well, I was in the Navy for 50 some odd years. born into a Navy family. So
wow.
I was born in Portsmouth, Virginia. 4 months later, I began my trek up and down the East Coast. So when people ask me where I'm from, I say the East Coast because I moved around 12 times before I graduated high school, and I spent the last 3.5 years. My dad was a Navy chief.
Huh.
So he joined the war in 1942.
Same year my father did.
Yeah. And yeah. So he finished that, did the war, then did a tour in Korea, and then two tours in Vietnam. So
you yourself did, right?
Well, he did.
Oh, he did.
And then I joined the Navy just shortly after he retired.
Hmm. Did he go on the Midway here by any chance or no?
He did not. He actually passed away
the
year I was graduated, the year I graduated and took my commission. So my dad was there to pin my butter bars on, my ensign bars on.
Hmm.
And then 4 months later, he passed away. Oh, so
must have been...
So we did basically 23 years on the East Coast as a surface warfare officer. Did a little time in Washington, mostly Florida, Virginia, Rhode Island, the typical places on the East Coast. Had a tour in Washington. I served on the joint staff with Chairman Colin Powell and General Shelly Kashvili, which was a very interesting place to be during the first Gulf War. And shortly thereafter, I then went to command. And at my 24th year of service, I was sent here in San Diego to be the base commanding officer at Naval Base San Diego. Mm. I selected for my first star out of that job. Went to the Pacific Northwest for 3 years as the regional commander and a surface group commander in that particular region, And then selected for my second star, came here and became the regional commander of the Southwestern United States, which is much larger than San Diego. It's actually six states. So all of the military infrastructure, to include fleet support from the West Coast of the United States, the Straits of Malacca, and the support of the Third Fleet element, which is, it's a pretty big area.
Yeah. And then, of course, we want to, I should have actually introduced you, your current title, Executive Director of the Center for Sustainable Energy.
Right. But so that's actually how I got involved, because I went from one to the other, and towards the end of the career, you know, my wife, who has been with me for 31 years at the time we retired, she got to pick the last duty station. We moved we moved 20 times in that time frame. So, yeah, we moved around quite a bit, but she was... She was fortunate enough to raise three just incredibly young men. So I have my oldest son is a serving chief petty officer in Pearl Harbor. He's a submariner. My middle son is an assistant art director in Huntington Beach. And my youngest just graduated from USD, of which I was a vice president for 2 years. Working some of the sustainable efforts there as well. So for those people who don't know in the listening area, University of San Diego has the largest photovoltaic system of any private university in the country.
Huh.
1.5 megawatts of a savings of about a little over $1 million a year in energy costs.
And did your interest in sustainability start at my alma mater, USD, or was it in... During the course of your military career?
It actually started in the course of my military career, and it really started out as an effort a little bit different than what you might think.
Okay, we're going to come right back with that with Len Herring, Executive Director of the Center for Sustainable Energy, right after this. Hang on.
AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we are back with Len Herring, Executive Director of the Center of Sustainable Energy, or for Sustainable Energy, and Classical Gas there. Who can forget that, huh, Richard?
Mason and, William.
Anyway, USD we're talking about. Now, you joined there in 09, so you're already, is that the year you left the service? Or
It is.
Okay.
Left the service.
Well, I remember we had the power outage. It was on a Friday, about, I think, 2010.
Late afternoon on a Friday.
Was it 2010? I'm trying to remember.
2010.
And I remember going out in Mission Valley, and the whole area was dark, except UCSD was lit up like
USD.
I mean, USD. I'm sorry. USD. And I'm sure UCSD.
UCSD had some lights going on, too, because they're very...
They're a microgrid.
Yeah, they're microgrid, which we had the chancellor on in June. And was USD a microgrid also?
It's not.
So why don't you explain that, the difference to people, and UCSD, you know, is about, like we said, about 90% off the grid and self-sufficient, and I think they're shooting for 100%. Are they getting close? Or?
Well, I think, you know, they're working their effort. They are an authorized microgrid, so they have the capacity to be able to generate 100% of their needs within that grid. USD's ability to be able to light the lights is really based on the fact that there was a generator installed a number of years ago that provided for about 70% capacity of the university in an emergency situation. So recognizing that you house close to 4,000 students, the need to provide electricity in the case of emergency was a very smart step for them. And when the power went out, the generator came on, and voila, there you are.
Is UC San Diego the only microgrid in the county that you know of?
It's one of the only microgrids authorized in the state.
Wow. Who knew that?
So you have munis, you have microgrids, and then you have the regulatory IOU session.
Wow. So is there a way you can get the energy turned on for my alma mater's basketball team? Because they're on a losing streak. And just wondering.
I don't work there anymore, Richard.
I know that.
San Diego State's having trouble with basketball.
Yeah, San Diego State can't even shoot the ball.
The Aztecs, right. So.
36 point. But you mentioned before the break that you got into your interest in sustainability predated your tenure at UCSD. How did that interest come about while in the military?
Well, I would tell you that my interest in the environment started when I was a Boy Scout.
Sure.
So Leave No Trace was how we were brought up.
Okay.
And, you know, when I went through the Navy, I realized that we weren't the best stewards of the environment, and I could do more about it. When I became the base commanding officer, I came here in 1999, and if you remember, the Defense Department was going through some massive budget reductions.
Mm-hmm.
So in the typical fashion, my skill set was business. I came to the base and looked at all of the business lines that I was providing to the fleet. And of course, you look at costs. Mm-hmm. And the greatest costs that I was being asked to handle on a regular basis was energy and water. So we began to measure. And by the time we were done, we recognized that by doing efficient opportunity, engaging in renewables and other things, we were able to basically pay for any of the cost increases that existed. So it started it really started down the idea that anything that I did from that perspective had opportunities to affect the renewable space, everywhere from water conservation to energy. We changed out thousands of tons of air conditioning units, changed the way we looked at lights and monitoring and changing and turn on a light, turn off a light. We reduced the energy consumption on the base by about 40%.
Huh. Wow. Because I notice, my father was in the Navy for a long time, so I'm familiar with military buildings and structures, and frequently the lights get left on. I just noticed when I was a kid that the lights were always on, even though nobody was necessarily there at night.
The porch lights noticed,
on, but nobody's home.
I noticed the same thing.
Just bugged me.
Actually started having commanding officers of particular facilities answer to my geek squad who would go around saying, your lights were on at 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, how about the new efficient lighting, the LEDs? Are those coming online a lot more?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've changed my entire house. One of the things that I believe in is that if you want to be successful, you got to walk the talk. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I expect to have my house at energy zero, net energy zero, by fall of next year.
Wow.
So my home is fully solar. So I'm producing 105% of my needs. I've gone through and changed all my windows. I've literally created all those opportunities. But I went through and with the help of a friend, monitored every one of the lights in my home.
Hmm.
And while there's an investment associated with what I'm about to tell you, the reality is that my energy reduction was significant. I was producing, if I turn on every light in the home, I was roughly around 4,000 watts, a little bit over. My home is almost 4,000 square feet, so it's not the typical. But it's built with a typical 1990s style construction, and it has probably 25 or 30 pot lights and all those type of things, each of them having 75 to 100 watt bulbs. And when I finished, I literally replaced every single one of the lights in my home and put an LED fixture in those lights. Today, I can turn on every light in my home, and I'm at 705 watts.
Wow.
Wow.
So that's when my kids
significant.
Come home, yeah, when my kids come home, I'm not worried about it. And the bad part about it is that I've actually had to put dimmers. I've had to install dimmers because the LED lighting is too bright.
Yeah.
In some of the locations that we replaced them with. So it was an additional $18. And of course, I do 90% of the work on my own. But I can tell you that Costco has the best deal for replaceable lights, and IKEA has the best deal for small fixture LEDs.
Wow, there you go. And they last a long time, those bulbs.
They last. Well, that was one of the things that we did at the university, too. So we spent about $20,000 creating an opportunity to actually measure and look at all of the lighting and then replaced it with LEDs. Now, there are two aspects of that. One is the energy fixture itself, but the other part is that they last tens of thousands of hours, even if you are to consider that they may only be on 12 to 14 hours a day. The maintenance associated with having to change a bulb out two or three times a year is huge.
Hmm.
When you only have to change a bulb out every 6 to 7 years, the maintenance requirements, as well as the maintenance staff, is significantly reduced. So they don't produce heat. They last an incredibly long time. Their payback, if you are using lights in particular, if you're using lights for more than 10 to 12 hours a day, LED is definitely the way to go if you want to replace lights. If you are looking at replacing them for the mere sake of replacing for an LED like I did, I made the investment, wasn't wasn't that smart from a money perspective unless the bulb went out.
I think some car dealerships got to get on the board with that. I think Toyota, where I bought my Toyota, I'll give them a plug, Toyota of El Cajon, they are green out there. I'll bet you a lot of their lighting is LED. I'm going to check on that. Because
Well, you'd be surprised. Walk into, you know, it's one of those things that you can do. You walk into a facility and you can tell right away whether or not they're serious about the environment, whether or not they're serious about their energy use, or whether or not they're serious about reducing the cost for their business alone. So if you recognize that water and energy are the two bills you must pay to keep the doors open.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two bills that you have no specific control over other than its use. So if you can reduce from a business perspective, because now we're talking business, if you can reduce that energy consumed, then the overriding outcome is a smaller bill. The closer and closer you get to that, recognizing that as a base, I saved close to 40% of the base's energy over the course of a year. That's $18.2 million returned to the taxpayer.
Yeah.
Not a small amount.
So I fired a cleaning service once in my office building where we owned the whole building and subleased half of it and had our office there, because I would drive by sometimes at night, and when the cleaning service is in, the entire building, every floor was lit up, and I would tell them, you're not going to have a job here if you don't turn the lights off where you're not at, and I'm going to drive by and check. And they simply refused to, to comply with what I thought was a very reasonable request to turn the lights off in all of the building that you weren't in and only have the lights on in the rooms that you were cleaning. But no, I mean, you would drive by. This thing was like the, you know, the Mecca on the hill, shining brightly.
Yeah,
just frustrated the heck out of me. So I just changed cleaning services and got one that knew how to turn lights off.
Len just pointed out the lights in this particular studio, and these are not the most efficient in the world. So there's track lengths. Yeah, they're incandescent. So we'll have to talk to Dave. I know in the hallways, it's motion sensors. The lights are off unless you're walking through the hallways.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
It's not just the sensors. It's the light itself. Remember that you even if you take a look at what we do, my bathroom, for example, had 7 pot lights in it. If you turned on the lights, each of them were somewhere between 75 and 100 watts. When you turn a bathroom on, you're looking at 700 watts usage. Today, their replacement is 18 watts each. So I'm using less electricity. And the whole purpose of our organization and why this is so important is, first and foremost, we have to recognize that the way we are structured from an energy use perspective is not sustainable. And we truthfully do need to recognize that first you need to reduce, then you need to be economical about how you go about doing it. But then the long-term effect is that our environment is better, our opportunities for prosperity is better, the sense and opportunity for our security into the future becomes much more relevant.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to come back with Len Herring, Executive Director of the Center for Sustainable Energy at energycenter.org, right after new sports and weather, so hang on. All right, we are back for the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life, the award-winning show. Over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Big thank you to our sponsors, UBS, Michael Caronta, and Drew Breedis. Couldn't do it without UBS. Also, Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, the best business valuation firm on the planet, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the value of their businesses and ways to reduce those risks and improve value. Geiger Law Office is Brenda Geiger. Brenda, thanks for bringing the kids out to the Oceanside Turkey Trot. Very much appreciate it. Brenda Geiger does estate planning and asset protection work. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics, the best CFO company here in San Diego. If your business isn't big enough to have a full-time CFO, Jason's company can do some amazing things for you. Speaking of CPAs, Polito Epic CPAs, Paul Polito and Don Epic. I always used to say Vista, but last week they moved to their new office in San Marcos. So Polito Epic CPAs, thank you very much. Our new bank sponsor, California Republic Bank, Lane Elliott, one of their vice presidents, is going to be a guest on our show in January. California Republic Bank is a really neat bank because they focus their efforts on working with successfully, closely held businesses and their owners, wealthy families and family offices. So a very nice niche market bank. Recently opened their first office in the UTC area here in San Diego. And last but not least, Servant Leadership Institute, servantleadershipinstitute.com. They have their fifth annual national conference coming up at the lovely Coronado Marriott on March 9th and 10th. If you want to hear some great material about leadership and see some of the amazing, some of the best and amazing leaders in the leadership world on the same stage at the same time, you need to come to this event, servantleadershipinstitute.com, because appearing on the same stage at the same time for the first time in history will be John Maxwell, Dr. Ken Blanchard, and Stephen M.R. Covey. So that's going to be a very exciting event. So check that out on our website, along with what else can people check out on our website, Joe?
Well, if they get over to iymoney.com and get your cursor over to the sponsors tab, there's a drop-down menu. You can find all the information about our sponsors there, phone numbers, emails, histories, everything like that. They've been working with Richard for many, many years, and you can see our awards there as well. And all the guests, we have now in alphabetical order, so if you want to find Len Harry.
Easy to find. We go by last name.
Just go to the guest list tab, because I know we've had Irwin Jacobs, Marilyn Burnham, a lot of interesting people, Jim Lampley, all them. So you
Dick Enberg, a Hall of Famer.
There you go. So you could just go on that guest list tab there and find any of those shows. And there you go. How about your daughter with the David Stockman story you're telling us at the
beginning? Yeah, she wanted to learn more about economics. She's funny because she just turned 18 and she's a freshman at San Jose State. And she sends me a text and she goes, "Dad, I didn't know how little I knew until I got to college." So very savvy young lady. And she says, "I want to learn more about economics." So I suggested she should do some reading, but I also suggested she go to our website because we've got three or four shows on there, mm-hmm. including David Stockman.
Listen to the podcast.
Listen to the podcast. She wound up buying his book, which
well, good for
is
him.
A very heavy book because it's 700 pages.
Yeah, 750, I think, yeah. But who's counting?
But I was thinking, you know, if you're a college student, you want to get some great material about different topics, hey, our website is the place to go.
Well, I've recommended, I mean, people have told me months later they've went and heard the Irwin Jacobs mm-hmm. interview or whatever.
Absolutely.
And, you know, getting a lot of still good feedback. That was, I think, one of our better shows. They're all good, of course. Anyway, let's get back to Len Herring here, Center for Sustainable Energy, Executive Director, and national security. I mean, this figure in the global view and, of course, in the future, grandchildren and your grandchildren and grandchildren, I mean, what does the future hold if we don't clean up our act? I mean,
well, it almost scares me sometimes when you start to pay attention to what we're doing and how we are not protecting our environment and our opportunities. So I give a presentation, and one of the things that I show in the very beginning is when I would have started this presentation maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I would have started it with the American flag. Today, I started with a picture of my three grandchildren. And the reason for that is I believe that if you really understand and you stop and take notice of what it is that we are and how we are positioning ourselves for our grandchildren, we are not doing a very good job. And there's so many things that lead me to that conclusion. And many of them people don't want to talk about because they're just sensitive issues. But a lot of them are things that we just simply don't have in our regular conversation on a daily basis. The world's in the midst of a population explosion. From the time of creation to 1850, it took us that long to get to 1.5. From 1850 to the Industrial Revolution to today, we went from 1.5 to 7.2.
Billion.
Billion.
Yeah. Billion.
Projections are that by 2050, we'll be at 9.4. And if we don't figure out how to get somewhere, we could be at 12.2 to 12.4 by the end of the century. That's 12 million new miles a month.
And hitting that head on is the international water crisis.
Water crisis. We have.
Well, people are living such a long time.
Yeah, you know, but the resources. Talk about the water.
So the resources. You know, we have this. The world is evolving at a rate six times faster than we did. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the 20th century. The 20th century was the bloodiest century in mankind's history. And virtually all of the conflicts that resulted in these massive efforts evolved around one very simple thing, and that was access to resources. Mm-hmm. There are only six principal players in that time frame where we were competing for these resources. Today, the non-industrialized world, which represents the other 70%, is moving at a rate six times faster than we did.
Mm-hmm.
So if you recognize that even the resources that we define our very nature of prosperity to be a finite source on the face of the earth, we're very, very disrespectful to what that means for our grandchildren's future. We throw out more food every day than the entire continent of Europe consumes.
Mm-hmm.
40% of the food in this country is thrown away. 80,000 tons of grain and cereal last year were thrown away because it failed to sell-by date.
Huh.
But yet, hunger's on the rise. Clean water and access to clean water is a significant issue. We're in tremendous drought. Our oceans are in terrible trouble. As you know, 93%, the oceans only hold 3% of the adult population of the food source that was then there 50 years ago.
Huh.
So we've outfished the very breadbasket that provides 70% of the world's population, its protein.
Yeah.
70% of the world's population gets its protein from the ocean.
So that can lead to conflict, apparently.
It already has.
Yeah. We had Sherry Harrison on the show a few months ago, and of course she's, I guess, the Middle East only female billionaire, and of course her companies are real estate oriented, and she was mentioning what a challenge water is in the Middle East and in Israel, and for her construction activities and the way they try to build communities and offices. Do you have examples of a country where, for example, access to water has caused, say, political instability?
Well, I think if you take a look at the environment as you see it, Syria is one of those great examples.
Mm-hmm.
Syria has been in almost a 10-year drought. It's one of the hottest places on the face of the earth. 3.1 million people and their population have been left basically on their own by their government. Geopolitical instability. Well, look at what's going on. The ISIS arise, the mm-hmm. radical movement. I would contend from a geopolitical situation that it's not much different than the environment that Mussolini found in Italy or Hitler found in Germany.
Hmm.
A desperate population looking for an opportunity and a prey for a solution.
Yeah.
There they are.
Yeah.
And, there are 15 years of drought. And what we don't want to recognize is that this is a global problem. São Paulo in Brazil, mm-hmm. which is the 12th largest city in the world, is just 2 weeks away from zero water. So imagine what the geopolitical instability of a country like Brazil might be.
Well, we're going to come back and finish up with these interesting thoughts with Len Herring, Center for Sustainable Energy, Executive Director, right after this. Hang on.
AM
76. All right, we are back in the home stretch with Len Herring, Executive Director of Center for Sustainable Energy. I'm going to give the website, energycenter.org. It's gotten a lot more robust when it first started out. When did the organization begin, Len?
Well, it started out as a non-governmental kind of organization in 96 and has grown to a rather large and healthy organization as we speak.
How many on staff now? Because it's a lot bigger than...
Yeah, we're 114, so we're a very atypical nonprofit.
I remember when you were originally like 12. A dozen or so, yeah.
It started out with 4, and then we went to 12, and mm-hmm. then today I actually approved the 114th employee, mm-hmm. PAF. But we're now open in L.A. and Oakland, so we have an office in both locations.
Huh.
We're no longer... The California Center for Sustainable Energy. We moved to remove the California only because we needed to reflect what our mission is and how our company's growing. We mm-hmm. are in the state of Massachusetts. We're in Nevada. We're in Hawaii. We're negotiating with a number of other states to...
You've kind of expanded your mission. You initially were just like a local efficiency organization. Now you're advising policymakers and regulators and agencies and everything. So it's become quite the expert source here. Huh?
And that's the piece that's so exciting about the organization is that we are not member-based. So that's something to understand. So we don't take donations other than donations for our programs like in education and such. But our regular work comes from grants, And contracts.
Hmm.
And we get that either through the Utilities Commission, through municipalities, through personal contacts, through the market.
Mm-hmm.
We get it from the state. We've had a number of contracts with the Office of the Governor. We helped build the governor's solar guidebook.
Mm-hmm.
We have a number of contracts with the Department of Energy. We have a number of research grants that provide us opportunities to look into the future for technological advances. But I'm really blessed. I have a great organization with tremendous talent.
Mm-hmm.
And not being tied to any particular industry solution is very unique for our space. So
mm-hmm.
we're respected and sought after because we really bring the market facilitation piece to the regulator and the legislator.
Mm-hmm.
So what works gets an evaluation on our part. We keep tremendous records. Our data research element has grown significantly because you can only fix what you can measure.
So you're a 501c3 or a different designation?
We are a 501c3.
Okay.
And that's how we get all of our business. So We're about a $10.5 million a year business.
You do accept donations from an
audience. Absolutely.
So, okay.
There's a few portions of our organization that rely solely on discretionary dollars. So we would very much like to increase our donor base in our K-12 education process, and more importantly in our policy, because we believe that the future is shaped through good legislation and informed regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my regulatory staff is done through discretionary. So when I make a profit, if there is, and there isn't a whole lot, it gets filtered into my policy and education piece. So we inform K-12, we inform homeowners, we hold solar workshops, we do solar hot water training. We're very much into workforce training. We would like to see a very large portion of the green industry and green economy grow as a result of our participation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of who we are.
Those hot water, the super hot water tanks, are those pretty efficient?
The solar is the greatest opportunity that we have. The only problem that you have here in Southern California is that you have to compete with the natural gas prices.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little more expensive.
I'm feeling like the hot water, though, they have these tanks that superheat the water, it use as, you know, they heat it as needed.
Right. As needed.
Those are pretty efficient?
They work good if you understand where they are best located.
Okay.
So in some cases they work, in other cases they're not.
It's good. In your home. So,
Len, there was basically no apple harvest in Julian this year, no apple festival because of a lack of water.
How do you like them apples?
And population is in, I don't mean in Julian, population is increasing. How do people produce food if we're going to have challenges with water?
Well, I think that's, again, another one of those pieces where we really have to measure what it is that we do, recognizing that we're extremely wasteful of this very precious resource.
Mm-hmm.
Americans, on an average, take a shower that lasts roughly 13 minutes.
Okay.
So 13 minutes is the average. And, you know, at USD, we actually did some behavioral science studies, and there are some tools that you can use. But if you recognize that if you just change your shower, and I lived in a world for 30 years where I took three-minute showers.
How about a mandatory shut-off?
You learn how to take really fast showers.
How about a mandatory shut-off valve on every shower?
Absolutely.
Some of them have them, some don't, but I think that should be mandatory.
And there are tools that there's an opportunity for us to engage in behavioral modifications of our youth and others, even to the fact that you could put something in the shower that minds an individual,
mm-hmm.
that, you know what, 5 minutes is more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we reduce, and this is a really interesting example. If you recognize that 19% of California's energy is created to move potable water, of which 40% of it goes down the drain, never mm-hmm. having been used for its intended purpose, you start to recognize the nexus by which energy and water mm-hmm. really comes to be. And you also recognize that 40% of that water should have been used someplace else, mm-hmm. maybe growing food
mm-hmm.
or, you know, keeping our orchards. If a field goes fallow for 1 year, it takes 3 years to return it to production. if an orchard goes fallow for 1 year, it could take 20 years to return it to its productivity.
One solution might be, a guest we just had, Dan Gibbs, CEO of Hometown Farms. I'll have to,
Vertical farming concept.
Vertical farming.
80% less water. I mean,
absolutely. And there are methodologies and there are technologies that exist, but we have to make the investment.
Mm-hmm.
We can harvest from our atmosphere, for example. Our atmosphere is perfect to harvest water. And we can do it at a rate of 10,000 plus gallons a day. We just have to make the investment. We don't have to go through the process. And of course, the water taken out of the atmosphere.
How would that be? Just put up big collectors
It actually uses
a dehumidifier.
A processor, very much like a dehumidifier, very much like your air conditioner, but it can be powered by the solar.
How many gallons are they using?
It can make up to 10,000 a day.
Huh, wow.
So they come in modules and they can be built into efforts. But
that might be the next best thing. So 1 minute till we have to get out.
Let me I can do some, because this is really important.
Okay.
If every single human being in America changed their shower behaviors by just 3 minutes every day, if just 200 million Americans took a shower every day, 3 minutes less, we would save 64,000 acre feet a day.
Huh.
And in 38 months, we'd fill Lake Superior.
Right.
So the drought and the conditions that we are experiencing are not all Earth's and climate's problem. They're ours.
Folks, get a hold of Len Herring and get over to energycenter.org. Learn more about the organization and how you can learn more about this important stuff. So, Richard Musil, thank you so much for seeing you. Len Herring, thanks for being our guest.
Pleasure.
Eric Rubalcava, our sound engineer, thanks for making us sound well. And thanks to Craig Blanke, your account executive, and to Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. Happy holidays, everybody. iymoney.com for all those podcasts. Good night now.
The AM. AM 760.
On sockets, on ratchets, on standard and metric, the Home Depot has Husky's 185-piece mechanics tool set with a lifetime warranty, normally $149, now just $99. So let's give someone's toolbox a tune-up. At this price, you'd better dash away now and pick one up. That's how to holiday. Let's do this. Husky's 185-piece mechanics tool set, just $99. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. While supplies last, U.S. only, see store for details.
Treating your cold at Walgreens comes with a little something extra. Time. We're just around the corner with everything you need to relieve your cough, cold, and flu symptoms. Like Alka-Seltzer Plus to attack your cold.